Hey, what's up, guys? Travis here. And if you've been following me or my story for any length of time, you know that I started a company called Guestio about a year and a half ago now. And one of the things that we are doing this year in 2022 is we're building a concierge program called the Fast Pass that allows you to get booked on top quality shows and platforms for the purpose of spreading awareness for your brand, grabbing attention, growing your credibility, your authority, et cetera, et cetera. And so if you are listening to this right now and you are a seven-figure plus entrepreneur and you have a budget to bring in traffic, attention, credibility, authority to your brand, then this might be a really great program for you. Just head over to travischappell.com/10K. Why 10K? Because we guarantee in this program that you're going to be able to speak in front of 10,000 people within 90 days. Okay, 10,000 people within 90 days. Imagine getting on a stage in front of 10,000 people to share your message, your story. Well, that's exactly what we are doing inside of this program through virtual stages like podcasts or virtual events or YouTube channels or blogs. You name it, we are working with it and we are trying to get you booked on those platforms. So travischappell.com/10x. There's a quick application there. And then right at the end of that application, it'll prompt you to set up a phone call where you'll jump on a call with me and we'll talk through whether or not you're a great fit for this program. Please act fast on this. Do not wait because we are only taking on one or two clients a week due to constraints with our team and the limited supply of high quality shows and platforms that are out there in the market. So if that's you and you're really wanting to explode your brand in 2022, head over to travischappell.com/10K, fill out the application, schedule a quick phone call, and you and I will chat really soon about whether or not this would be a great fit for you. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Hey, this is David Meltzer, producer and host of Entrepreneur's Elevator Pitch and The Playbook. And if you want The Playbook to explode your network, you should be listening to the Build Your Network podcast with my good friend, Travis Chappell.
Welcome back to the show. I believe that who you know is more important than what you know. If you agree, then keep on listening for tips on how to cultivate meaningful connections the right way. If you disagree, then tune in anyway to let me prove you wrong with my journey. My name is Travis Chappell, and this is the Build Your Network podcast. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another amazing interview show here on the Build Your Network podcast. Today, I'm bringing on David Meltzer, and this is a unique episode because this is only one of the handful of times that I've brought on a guest for the second time onto the show. And David is definitely somebody that qualifies for that. So the first time that I had him on, it was just a conversation over Zoom call just for some scheduling conflicts. So this time I was actually able to sit down with him in person and get a really solid interview done. And by the way, if you want to watch that video, you can head over to travischappell.com/YouTube. We're doing a lot over on YouTube now. So if you want to watch some of these interviews that we're doing, some of the Freestyle Friday episodes, and just see some more content instead of listen to it, that's travischappell.com/YouTube. But David, if you don't know, he is the co-founder and CEO of Sports One Marketing and S1 Media House. He's a two-time number one best-selling author and has been named a top 10 keynote speaker by Forbes and Entrepreneur. Marshall Goldsmith has recognized Dave as a top 100 business coach and currently an advisory board member to over 45 companies and charities. He more recently invested into Splice, which is one of the world's top esports teams alongside NBA All-Star Meta World Peace. David is the executive producer and host to Entrepreneur's original show, Elevator Pitch, with nearly 40 million views, and host of the top five business podcast, The Playbook. Some of the things that we go into in this episode, we talk a lot about inner fulfillment and how to get there. We talk a lot about how to overcome things that have happened in the past between you and other people. And these are some big things here because the particular relationships that we're talking about in this episode are people that led to David losing tens of millions of dollars back in the day. So these aren't just like little squabbles over nothing. These are really big things that were super damaging to him and his life. And he talks about how to get over those things. So you're not going to want to miss out on a single thing that we talk about in this show. But first, really quickly, before we get into all of that, I recently opened up a few more VIP days on my calendar. Since opening it up a couple months ago, I've had over a dozen people come out to Vegas now for one-on-one conversations about how to podcast. I'm having an absolute blast. class. So if building a professional and profitable podcast, and those two words are extremely, extremely important. Okay. I'm not just teaching people how to have another hobby that doesn't pay you anything and cost you money every month. I'm talking about a professional, profitable podcast. If that's something that you want to do, then this is exactly what you've been waiting for. So if it's something that you're interested in at all, and you're finally wanting to take action on it, then go over to travischappell.com/coaching to apply. And if you qualify, I will see you out here in Vegas really soon. And now here is my chat with David Meltzer. Dave, welcome back to the show. You are like one of maybe three people that has had a first interview and now has been invited back. So it's a pretty elite club at this point.
I feel like Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the 5-time host club.
Right. Yeah,
and we'll have our own little room, bathrooms.
Cocktail reception.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm in the 2-timer club. Nice.
Well, hey, man, I know that you got a super busy schedule and stuff, and we're here at Thrive. You just spoke, crushed the stage and everything like that. So I want to be respectful of your time and just kind of jump right in here. The last time that we talked, and if you're listening to this right now, you can always go search my site for Dave Meltzer and find our last interview that we did. Last time we talked a lot about like here and now type stuff, like practical advice and things. So I want to take this opportunity to go back and build a little bit more context and kind of do it in a reverse way and talk more about your story. So let's go back to like very beginning stuff here. Talk to me about childhood day, like, you know, day in the life, you know, academic, sports, like what would you like to do?
That I kind think of stuff. First place it always started is when I was 5 years old, because that's when my directive really became present. My dad left, and my mom had 6 kids, single, second grade teacher, and she was a super mom. In fact, I was really happy when I was a kid, except for one thing, when we didn't have enough money to eat for the car breaking down or for summer camp, and I'd catch my mom crying. And in my mind, I was always happy, except for when something money related. And so in my mind, I believe money bought happiness. Hmm. I thought it's the only thing, and if I could buy my mom a house, if I could buy her a car,
right,
those two things. And so I was really driven at a very young age that I was going to be rich. People would say, what do you want to be when you grow up? I'd say rich. like literally, that's what I would say.
Did you get a bunch of flack for that?
Yeah, because especially because I come from a very humble mom who the fetus wasn't fully developed until after graduate school. She drove us by Jewish guilt. It was doctor, lawyer, failure. Mm. Everything was your typical standard. Get straight A's in school, get a scholarship to college. This is how people are successful. Mm-hmm. This is what you do. And here I was in some wacky idea that I didn't have to go to Harvard, that, you know, I could drop out of Harvard and make millions of dollars.
So did you do that?
I ended up wanting to play football.
Okay.
So I went to college to play football.
So played a lot of sports growing up then?
Yeah, I did. And football and baseball were my best two sports, but I loved football. I wasn't built for it, except for I had a lot of speed. I could run scared faster than most people could angry. But I literally picked the college that I went to, and I could have went to a lot of different schools so I could play football. And there, as you can imagine, looking at me today, there was a really, really, really long list of colleges that wanted me to play football. A lot wanted me to play baseball, but I did. I went to college, but I was entrepreneurial. In college, I took a job selling educational materials, and way back then they had encyclopedias.
Yeah.
But basically, I learned a lot about business in this job. They gave me 2 leads a night, one at 6 p.m. and one at 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. And I'd go out, they bought leads from hospitals, newborn baby parents, mm-hmm. and you basically sold them an educational system for $45 for the next 18 years, a month, and you would get new books. So, you know, books to read while you're pregnant, books when they get all the way up to the encyclopedias when the kids get in high school. Now, all of them are worthless today because of the internet, but I learned that I could sell, right? And so, and I did the same thing in law school. I went to law school to be an oil and gas litigator. I went to the law school that I chose because those were the richest lawyers, the guys who litigated oil and gas.
So always driven by the money.
Yes, I made my decisions. I know I chose my college to play football, but I thought that's how I was going to make my money. Mm. I actually thought I was good enough at 5'7" and 147 pounds that I had a big enough heart and fast enough that I would make it, but I was no Darren Sproles.
Right.
I just wasn't that good.
Yeah. Right. But one thing I love about that, though, is that you found a way to jump back into the sports industry, which is super cool because I played a ton of basketball growing up, and I always thought I was going to do something in basketball. And so I think it's super cool that you've, like, maneuvered your way back into this back door and then found a way to still stay in the thing that you love doing.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is even when I got out of law school, my first job, I wove sports into my job. So I would host my clients right, at sporting events. Mm-hmm. When I ran big companies, I'd sponsor things, naming rights,
gotcha.
Right? Whatever I love to do, right? Yeah. Those were the things that I was involved with. And so I didn't think it was an accident. That was actually the reason, you know, I got into sports is I was a good customer of it. So I was able to articulate, hey, man, I've been on the buying side for years, which really would make me a great sales guy, which led me to be the CEO of the most notable sports agency in the world.
Definitely. So we will definitely get more into that.
Yeah. Let's go back to kids.
Go back to story. Yeah. So one of six
kids.
Kids.
Yeah. Five boys, one girl.
Where are you?
Middle.
You're right in the middle.
Bottom, yeah.
Okay. So what did everybody else do? Were they all like
doctors, lawyers? Yeah. So my oldest brother actually was a doctor. My next brother actually was an engineer. My sister went to Columbia Business School, all Ivy Leaguers. And then my next brother went to Harvard, summa cum laude, biochem major, and actually ended up being a rabbi, though. He didn't become a doctor.
Really?
He's a PhD doctor, right? Yeah. But not. And then my youngest brother went to Wharton, University School of Economics in London, as well as Columbia. So two MBAs, never got B's. And so it was really interesting, though, because I think there's another thing that I learned from my mom. And the consistent behavior that I have, most people call it work ethic. Mm-hmm. But my mom, she put everyone else first. And so she'd come home from teaching, pack our dinners in a paper bag. We'd go into a country squire station wagon. And the older ones would read to the younger ones. We'd all be piled in there, and she would fill up turnstiles at the 7-Eleven. Now, that story's really layered for me because, one, you know, I believe parents don't tell kids what to do. They won't listen if you do, but they show you. And I think all of us were there, and she was showing us without complaining what she was doing. And I have this philosophy that you know, you don't do what you love. There's no such thing. I think that you learn to love what you do. And everybody reverse engineers my life, and they're like, well, of course you loved all your jobs. You've done this, 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 and this. I'm like, look, let's be honest. When I graduated law school and started selling legal research online, there's nobody in my law school that thought I was going to make millions of dollars, and they all thought I was a moron. None of them were jealous of me. Not until I learned to love what I did and was great at it and made tons of money did everybody want to come work for me, tell me how lucky I was and how amazing it is.
I think that's such an incredible point. Something that people are starting to ask me now is because I do currently do something that I enjoy doing. And that's why I started doing this, because I was in door-to-door sales for 6-7 years, like training, management, recruiting, selling, all that kind of stuff. And it was taught me a lot and great time freedom, good money, all that stuff, but I didn't like it. So jumping into this, it was doing something that I really enjoyed doing. But exactly what you're saying, I think, is a fantastic point, because bottom line, I would rather be doing smoking a cigar, sitting on the patio in Cabo overlooking the ocean, just about over anything else, you know? So like, ultimately, you're never going to just love every aspect of what you do. I just don't believe that. Yeah. And you, perfect example, would like, I always tell people, go watch Dirty Jobs for a season with Mike Rowe. And he goes through all these different jobs. These people are like cleaning septic tanks, just the nastiest, filthiest jobs. But you watch them, they're just having a good time. And a lot of them make good money because nobody else wants to be in them. Like, those people did not get into that for the love of the game.
Right.
They learned to love it and built something out of that. So how can somebody listening right now do that with something if they're not sure exactly how to change their mindset about it?
Yeah, so the difficulty of changing your mindset is you have to be able to find the light in anything. Mm-hmm. So when you derive purpose from what you're doing, then you can be passionate about it. So, you know, for example, when I graduated law school, I had law loans coming from a very, very poor family. I was deriving a purpose, right? My purpose was I wanted to buy my mom a house and a car. So I remember the recession, nobody was getting jobs, and I was praying to God that if he could give me a job that would buy my mom a house, buy my mom a car, and pay off my law loans, that I'd shovel shit with my hands for 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, with grace. Hmm. Meaning, I'd love what I did.
Yeah.
Because it was tied to a purpose. And when you see people, and you see them in these jobs, and they work for me sometimes, but they're driven by a purpose. You know, I saw that my mom enjoyed what she did because her purpose was she was going to create and let her family thrive. She was going to create a legacy through her children, and she was going to empower her children. And that purpose was greater than anything else, which allowed her to love the fact that we're all in a car. And I didn't know any difference because of the energy that she carried, right? I used a trash taking out example when I was little. I hated taking the trash out. Yeah. And I purposely put this into place and said, I'm going to love taking the trash out because I put a purpose to it. Mm-hmm. I said, I'm going to use taking the trash out as time to think about what I want, right? And to make me happy.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, instead of creating a negative energy resistance and shortages and voids and obstacles and taking the trash out, all of a sudden my energy shifted about the trash because it was an opportunity for me to think about and really plan on what I wanted for myself and how to make me happy. So not only was I taking out the trash at home, at the office, and friend's house, but everybody around me saw my energy. And including my three teenage daughters, who trash was like kryptonite to, who all of a sudden, my middle one, who never, ever would take the trash out, is like, hey, Dad, can I get that for you?
Yeah.
She didn't do it because of any other reason than the energy and purpose that I had given the trash. It was calling her, right? Because it's just like if you're eating something, and say I was eating something delicious, and I was like, ugh. Right? But while I was doing, ugh, my energy was, ugh, but I'm eating it, and inside I'm like, oh, that's really good. Well, imagine the other, right? You got something, you're like,
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's terrible.
Right.
What are people going to do, right? They're going to go and, oh, can I have a bite of the mmm?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what they do with energy. When they feel the mmm, they're like, oh, can I participate?
Can I get in on that?
Exactly. Yeah, right. And it's just arbitrary and capricious. It's an illusion. It's what we infuse light into. It's how we find the light. In fact, if you hate somebody or you disagree with someone, the easiest thing to do is find a light. Find thinking that you do like about them. Look for the positive side. Understand where they're coming from and then pray for their happiness.
Yeah.
All of the negativity, destruction, death, all the disparate, barren feelings will go away.
Yeah. Can you give us an example of that?
Oh, yeah. So in my life, we'll go back to where I came from.
Yeah.
So I'm a multimillionaire, and I am just investing. And one of my neighbors tells me that he's going to teach me condo conversion. And you know, if I buy this condos for millions of dollars, he's going to teach me how to do this. Meanwhile, it ends up that he made a mistake. He thought it would have been converted already, which is called a white paper. That never happens. Well, instead of working it out, which he offered to work it out, right? I used my ego, my wife ego, everybody was attacking everybody. And initially when I went bankrupt, I blamed him. My wife certainly did, and I hated him. And I was on a journey of trying to forgive him, but I will tell you that energetically, I did.
Yeah.
I would tell people, man, that you know my bankruptcy is the best thing that ever happened to me. I learned so much. I'm going to be such a better person. It saved my life. It saved my marriage, blah, 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 blah. But I would go home and dream about pulling the guy's fingernails off in Tabasco. The energy I was carrying. Mm-hmm. And so I started this mechanism of closing my eyes, and I'd picture him, and I'd find all the good things about him. Like, he was a good dad. He was really good to the community. He sponsored this. And all of a sudden, all these things I started to remember that he did good to me started to come out. Mm-hmm. And I would take that, and I'd think about what I love the most, like a family member or my favorite hamburger, whatever it was.
Right.
And I take the light and I cover him and cover the same and then hold that light over me in an exercise with my eyes closed and nobody around until I felt my energy shift. And I will tell you, because people ask, you know, I'm a big believer in time is infinite. It took me 9 years until I carry a true energy of forgiveness and gratitude towards the guy, where I actually went up to him at a Chargers tailgate game and thanked him sincerely, energetically sincerely.
Sincerely is the key word there.
Yeah, I really, and I still have that. I have no, you know, even if we were talking about him right now 5 years ago, there'd be an elevated, if you had a brain tester
on me. You start getting all.
Yeah. You might not be able to see it, but the brain waves would go up and my tension level, if you had a, you know, pulse thing.
Right.
You could do it now and you'd be like, this guy truly is at peace because he found the light. Mm-hmm. And I tell people all the time, if things aren't going the way that you expect them to go, it's just a matter of understanding and praying for or putting faith into what you want, which is praying for someone's happiness.
Yeah.
So very simple formula. I don't understand what's going on. Try to understand it.
Yeah.
But moreover, put faith in what you want out of the situation.
Yeah.
And that, in this case, when someone that you don't like, pray for their happiness, because if they're happy, they won't be attacking you.
Yeah. You've said something recently that I thought was really interesting, and that was there is no success tied to money, like gaining it, losing it, which is totally contradictory to anything you hear, right? Everybody's always like, oh, successful equals this, unsuccessful equals this. Can you kind of expound on that and tell us more what you mean by that?
Yeah, so for me, detaching my emotions from an outcome is very important, right? I want to enjoy the consistent, persistent pursuit of my happiness.
Mm.
Now, success isn't determined by money, and money can't buy happiness, but what money can do is it allows you to shop, right? And so if you're shopping for the right things, you're gonna be happy. If you're shopping for the wrong things, you're not. But depending on what you wanna shop for is determined upon how much money that you want. Now, you could be what other financially successful, meaning that you have more money than others, mm-hmm. but that doesn't make you successful.
Yeah.
Right? I had more money than I ever dreamed of, and I think I was the biggest loser. In all the time of my 51 years of life, the time that I had the most money was the time I felt I was the biggest loser.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. It was a large number.
Over $100 million.
Over $100 million
yeah, it's a large
that
number.
You're worth, and then it just goes gone instantly. So
this episode of the show is brought to you by Indeed. We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is not to search at all. It's to match and match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need this platform, guys. I'm telling you, Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging candidates so you can connect with those people even faster. And it doesn't just help you hire faster. In fact, 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And look, guys, one of the things that I wish I would have used Indeed for is this matching service. You can search and search and search and search and search all day long, but to actually be presented with quality candidates, like hiring a recruiter for you that's presenting people that has actually done the work to vet them and bring quality people in front of you, that work by itself is the fact that it's done by a software instead of like a team of high quality recruiters is pretty insane. So they leverage over 140 million qualifications and preferences every single day, which is why Indeed's matching engine is the best one that you can use. It's constantly learning from your own preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets at doing the job for you. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility over at Indeed.com/Travis. Just go to Indeed.com/Travis right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed here on the podcast. Indeed.com/Travis. Terms and conditions apply. If you need to hire, you need Indeed.
Now, obviously, you can laugh about it. You can joke about it. Back then, what were the emotions? Like, when
timing
was
it, so, yeah.
When was the point where you were just like, damn? You know what I mean? Like,
so 2 years before I went bankruptcy, I went through a quantum shift, right? My wife woke me basically to understanding that I was living my life the wrong way. Mm-hmm. And so for 2 years, I was starting to live my life the right way. And all of a sudden, things got too steep. And I was in that, wow, I really screwed this up.
Yeah.
Now, my mindset had always already started to evolve and accelerate. So I wasn't in, I would say if I went bankrupt when my wife attacked me and told me she wasn't happy and all that, I probably couldn't have handled it at that time.
Yeah.
But I had so much money at that time and I started on the right path that my mindfulness was prepared for the bankruptcy. And I was probably the only one that wasn't worried. Like in my mind, it was math. I had already explored and learned about the unconscious competency and realized that I carry an energy. I'm one of those people. You could take all the money in the world, dump it into a desert, and I'd be one that it keeps coming back to. Like, I believe it goes back to the same people energetically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I had great confidence that there was no accident 9 months out of law school as a millionaire, no accident that I was a multimillionaire. And there's no accident that I lost it all, but it really didn't worry me because I knew how to make money. What I really wanted to learn was how can I be happy with making a lot of money, and two, how can I maintain that? And what came about is understanding that it all comes through me for others. I started creating complete fulfillment, purpose, and passion by being profitable because I had a newfound incentive that was endless.
Yeah.
Right? When things happen for you, you can have too much or enough. You're full. Right? That's what creates this empty feeling. Is that what do I buy now? Right? You know, like I know it sounds sick to say, but I was in that place where it's like, to be happy, okay, I'll buy more things, different things. And pretty soon it's like, this isn't it. But when it comes through you and there's more than enough of everything for everyone, and you're like, wow. Like today, I spoke at Thrive and I tried to inspire people to impact 1 billion people. Now, as crazy as that might sound, on one stage to impact 1 billion people, even though there's only 2,000 people in the room, may have seemed crazy. As crazy as 10 years ago when I told people that you could talk on a cell phone real time in color in China back and forth at very little charge, if any.
Yeah.
And they said, that's impossible. Well, some of the people out there, when I told them today that it's not impossible to impact a billion people, just follow me. If half of you today, 1,000 of you, if I can teach you in the next hour to empower another 1,000, to empower another 1,000, we just impact a billion people, right? Yeah. 1,000 times a 1,000 is a million times a 1,000 is a billion. And all of a sudden, my crazy idea of talking across the world in color for very little charge to China is about as real as impacting a billion people. And I can't tell you how many people afterwards told me, man, we're going to change the world. 1/8 of the world is going to be happy because I have a new mission. Yeah, and I'm thinking to myself, this is amazing.
Right, right. So I'm really curious about this because you're a big numbers guy, right? Care a lot about numbers and you know numbers very well. But then you have this other side of you that's very much like emotional, spiritual, and it seems like you make a lot of decisions in this realm, but with the numbers as well. And typically I find those two fields like opposing each other. So can you talk about like—
I see them synergy? The same, yeah. So for me, everything is math, but part of that math is energy and in motion. And so what I utilize is awareness. So the biggest gift I could give you is an awareness. So if you say, well, what does that mean? I said, for example, if health is your primary concern, imagine if you had an awareness of when something that you were doing, eating, saying, believing, or surrounding yourself with was unhealthy for you or corroding your health. That'd be a great awareness, don't you think?
Yeah.
What about the same thing if money was your objective?
Yeah.
What if you had the awareness, a simple awareness, of when to buy and sell? Is there any greater gift I could give somebody in financial? You could be, I don't care who you are, what you create, what you innovate. If I give you a simple awareness that, hey, gold is this today, if you buy it this day and sell it this day, there's a margin. It's just a matter of how much money you can raise.
Right, right.
Because you know it.
Right.
So for me, this combination in this complementary world of spirituality, right, which is a flow, a currency, a faith, and actual math, and I utilize them both to elevate my vibration or my awareness to make good decisions. In fact, you know, we were talking about, I have my new book coming out, Game Time Decision Making.
Yeah.
I believe the math in making decisions is in the ability to be more interested than interesting and raise your awareness to the assumptions you're making.
Yeah.
Because all it takes is one bad assumption that could kill you, let alone financially kill you. So one bad assumption, doctors make them all the time. They make one bad assumption, all of a sudden you're dead. One bad assumption.
Yeah.
Right? And we do that with, I made one bad assumption and lost over $100 million. I assumed that because I had equity in all my properties, the bank would give me money. Little did I know that the bank doesn't have to give you money even if you have equity, and banks can lose money and want to hold on to your property instead of loan money. And then when you're not as liquid and you miss one payment, other banks don't want to give you loans, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse. One bad assumption. If I use mentorship, someone that's been in this situation, and I said, hey, I'm going to make this decision to spend all my money because I have equity and I think I'm going to borrow against. You've been doing this for 60 years. Mm-hmm. Can you see anything faulty in my assumptions?
Yeah.
Person would have said, yeah, I do actually. What if the market does this? Or what if this happens?
Yeah.
That's why I use other people connecting all of us since we're one anyway to ask, you know, my two favorite questions. To ask one, how can I help you? How can I be of service? How can I provide value? Whatever way you want to phrase it, it's basically, dude, do you need anything?
Yeah.
And the other side is, the harder side is, hey, any way or anyone you can help me with?
Yeah.
And those two questions, I will pound it into my following until, and the reason I pound it and talk about it so much is I don't do it every day. It was like 9 months on stage telling people to say thank you before you go to bed or when you wake up. Mm-hmm. It's a complete hypocrite because you can't do it for 30 straight days. It took me 9 months for me to do it.
Yeah.
I was laughing today because I gave a challenge to everybody to give me a thumbs up for 14 straight days.
Yeah.
Right? And we had 150 people in a mastermind yesterday. And yeah, most of them texted me immediately or DM'd me immediately a thumbs up.
Yeah.
Well, I got very few this morning.
Really?
Until I was back on stage reminding people, and then they started sending them again. But I promise you, and it's frustrating, but in reality, I promise you the majority of the people that have sent me thumbs up won't be doing it by Monday. The majority.
Yeah.
So the real success, the empty mile exists in the people that can enjoy the consistent, everyday, persistent pursuit of their potential, what I call a habit machine. If they can create a habit machine where their being is one in which you can effectuate what you want by consistently doing it, then you can be like, oh, I want to lose weight. Okay, I'm going to do this every day. Oh, I want to be stronger in my right arm. I'm going to do this every day.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to make more money. I'm going to do this every day. Oh, I want to improve my relationship with my kids. I'm going to do this every day. I'm going to improve. That's what's the key component in there? Being able to create a habit machine where I think about what I want to do every day, and I'm out of my own way, meaning my ego is not corroding the connection of what I know to be true.
Yeah.
You list out three things. Go around. This is an incredible experience. And I suggest people do it. Go and say three things in your life that you know are good for you that you don't do. Right?
Yeah.
And we all have them.
Yeah.
There's three things, right? I shouldn't drink, or right, I shouldn't smoke, right, or I should whatever. Why are you doing them? Right, there's other things that you can do to have fun, but working out, not working out. Which one do you think is better for you?
Probably working out.
Yeah, right? So why can't you do it every day? Let me give an easier one. Do you believe, I hate to interview you, but I'm going to ask you the question. Do you believe that if you say thank you every day for 30 straight days, morning and night, that'll change your life?
Yes.
Do you truly believe that?
I do.
Do you do it?
I do not.
I know, me neither every day. I still miss.
Right.
I'm teaching this stuff. I know it in my heart and soul. Mathematically, I know it. Spiritually, I know it. To the point where a grateful person will look at their life and say, I have more lives to spend. I'm so grateful that this life is just not it. And I can't prove it either way, and neither can anyone else. But I just decided that's the more grateful way to look at it. That I might as well live forever than not.
That's very true, right? Yeah.
And it's just like saying, I get to do this, not I got to do this. Mm. Or you get stopped at a red light and you're like, thank you. Right, because you know that it's a bigger piece of the puzzle, and that you stopping at this light was actually creating a better experience for you in some way or manner. Right, this is all just an attitude of gratitude. But yet, the most simplest things that we can do, 99.9% of the people can't do them. And so I learned about, all right, how do I get better at doing them?
And then, what was the answer to that for you? What did you do?
I lowered the bar. I mean, I love simple answers.
Yeah.
Because the universe loves simple. So what I realized was, if I want to do something every day, I need to lower the bar. I need to create as little resistance as possible. So I would set goals of doing something for a minute minimum a day and see if I could do it for 7 days. Or if it's like working out was one. And this is a true story. I got 47 pounds overweight because I was traveling. And the reason was, I put my family first, then my work, and then my health. So I was never really focused in on my health.
Never prioritized.
Yeah, because there's always time, more time to spend with my family or work. Mm-hmm. Like, it was always like, I don't have time to work out.
Right.
Oh, you know what? And my job is around drinking and desserts and fried foods and, right?
And I'm just
consistently gaining weight. That's what I was good at. So, like, you get there, and all of a sudden I said, okay, I need to work out. So what am I going to do? So I really use this to implement what now 7 days a week minimum I spend an hour a day on my health. First, before my family and work. So I readjusted my priorities. I first day said I'm going to put my tennis shoes on. And so the night before I went to sleep, I laid out my tennis shoes with the socks. And so before I got on the shower, right, I woke up and I put the shoes on. And I'm like, you know what? I put my gym shorts on, then I put my shirt on. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to drive to the gym. I kept inching myself, right?
Right.
Then I drove the 24-hour fitness. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to go in and do 15 minutes on the elliptical. Not hard, right? Nice. I just want to stretch out. Like, I hadn't worked out in so long. And I ended up 30 minutes on the elliptical and actually breaking a sweat, feeling really good, got endorphins pumping.
Yeah.
Went home, and I said the next day, I laid the shoes out. And once again, back to the gym, back to the gym. Now it's the reverse habit, right? If I'm not working out, I'm like, oh, I got to figure out something. I go to only hotels that have gyms. I do, everything revolves around it.
Right.
And that's what we do in our entire life by getting the exponential growth and acceleration that we want out of something. It doesn't start without action. And so we're really good at saying, oh, you know, I need to work out. So I'm going to work out an hour tomorrow. Right. So from zero to hero, are you kidding?
Yeah.
So here's another.
I'm going to go from waking up at 10 a.m., not working out at all and eating sugar all day, to waking up at 4 a.m., working out for 3 hours and eating broccoli at every meal.
Yeah. And the best analogy is, let's be honest, if you want to do push-ups every day, right, tell me who's going to end up in a better place. The guy who does 100 push-ups the first day and then is so sore that he can't do them for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Or the guy who says, I'm going to do one push-up for 3 straight days, and then I'm going to double it every third day because it'll be at 100 when I get to 300 days.
Got it. Yeah. Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Who's going to get there? I guarantee the guy that does one push-up for 3 days, then 2 for 3 days, then 3 for 3 days
will
make it to 100.
This episode of the show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks and stacks of resumes, a confusing review process, but today hiring can be easy and you only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/BYN. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands and thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. In fact, it's so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/BYN. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BYN. ZipRecruiter.com/BYN. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. What's up, everyone? Just wanted to take a quick second and give a shout out to my favorite podcasting app, Himalaya. If you're not listening to podcasts on this new app, you're definitely missing out. It's like a social media app, but for podcast listeners. Follow your go-to shows, like and comment on your favorite episodes, and download professionally curated playlists made just for you. So head on over to your App Store or Google Play Store and download Himalaya today and thank me later.
Would you say that then this whole conversation is leading me to the, you know, thought that consistency really is what it all boils down to?
Absolutely. Do you know why? Because that's the way we're made. So here's the flow of our current. This is the flow of the objects in which we want. So our bodies, we're a system, and we have cellular memory, a cellular structure, an embodiment, which is our conscious. The way that we input data into our bodies is through the 5 senses. We see things, we smell things, we hear things, we taste things, we touch things, period. Mm-hmm. The unfortunate part about that system is that our data is foggy. Our eyes don't work 100%. Our nose doesn't work 100%. Our ears don't work. Yeah. You understand that. Right. So what we try to do, though, is we try to be consistent of the 10,000 new data points, thoughts that we get about from the perceptions of the 5 senses. Well, if we can control and maximize the clarity of what the inputs are, keep them positive with gratitude and forgiveness, accountability and inspiration. Mm-hmm. If we're inputting into the embodiment all 10,000 of them, none of them negative, none of them. But if it's all positive, well, that goes then into our neural pathways, the second part of our system, subconscious. 40,000 of the same thoughts are brewing there. So the majority of the time, those are what we're inputting into our brain. Yeah. The 40,000 thoughts, not the 10,000. Mm-hmm. The majority is when you're sleeping, most of your inputs from these 40,000, that's already a third of your day.
Wow.
Right? Now, if we control what we're putting in, we're now controlling those 40,000 because the high vibrating, the more lightful thoughts, the more positive things that are electronically charged, mathematically higher than the other. It takes one particle of light to adjust 1 million particles of darkness, mathematically proven.
Wow.
Right? You're in a room of darkness and you turn a candle, one particle of light cancels out 1 million particles of darkness.
Wow.
Really cool, right?
Yeah.
Same thing in your brain. One particle of light, 1 million particles of darkness. So if you're controlling 10,000 of these particles in their light, they're going into the 40,000 particles, more light, neural pathways are formed. Now you're creating those habits, right? Neural pathways are what creates habits.
Yeah.
Then the thing that most people have no idea about is the unconscious competency, which is your genetics. How that neural pathway system, the 40,000 particles or thoughts or whatever you call them in your subconscious, are impacting your DNA. Your personality traits, characteristics, obsessions, and addictions that have been carried down from 4 generations or more dependent upon your beliefs. Hmm. Could be 4 billion lives down to you or just 4 generations. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Either way, you can activate the DNA that you want and deactivate the ones that you don't want. Then even more complex is the unconscious competency of energy. As I spoke from before, I carry an energy of being able to track money, right? And I can teach people to shift their energy.
Yeah, so I was going to say, so wait, do you just born with this? Or is this like
It's in my genetics.
Yeah.
Right? So yes, I was born a certain way. And you know people that are born this way. You've seen them when they're 5. I was born that way. There's no accident that 9 months out of law school that I was making money. Mm-hmm. There's no accident that I was making money selling tennis shoes at 4 a.m. when I was in law school or educational systems when I was 18 years old, making killer money. I have an unconscious competency. But what I have learned is I can teach people, right? I think that's why my coaching and executive coaching, coaching the coaching business advisory is that I am deep about look, I'm going to teach you to put faith into what you want. People are like, what are you talking about? You're world renowned for this and you're telling me it's faith-based? I'm like, yeah, it's faith-based. The aggregate of what you think, say, do, believe, and the unconscious competencies. I'm going to take you through with focus homework every day, mostly about minimum of 10 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have you putting faith by your actions, your words, your thoughts, your beliefs, and your energy into what you want and using your faith, that aggregate, just like money, as an object of current, as an object of energy to put as a currency into the current, the flow,
yeah.
which I call intention, right? What do I intend to happen that goes far beyond most people's imagination? We don't even imagine big enough. Mm. But if I put the currency of faith into the current of intention, I'm going to learn consistently to get what I want faster and more accurately again and again and again. And pretty soon you're one of those people, they're like, man, he's lucky.
Yeah, right.
That's all luck is. It's someone that understands the currency of faith.
Yeah, just good stuff happens for him all the time. He's just one of those lucky guys.
Yeah, you're full of light.
But, yeah, you're just attracting that to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
So shifting gears and talking a little bit more about what you brought up, your new book coming out. You mentioned one or two things from that. What are a couple of other insights that you are trying to push out there and allow people to take into their lives?
Yeah, so when we make decisions, we usually make decisions based upon the opinions of others. And, you know, we make huge mistakes in our life. I always say to take advice just because someone loves us is really bad advice. Mm. We end up most of the time taking advice from people that don't know what they're talking about because they care a lot about us, mm-hmm. right? They're called our parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, siblings, best friends. That's who we call them, teachers. Yeah. And so what we need to do is go ahead and seek the right people, mm. people who sit in the situation that we want to be in. One of the examples that I'm using now is I'm cashing up, right? I know without a doubt, because I've studied history, mm-hmm. that when markets drop, it's good to have cash. Mm-hmm. People sell things for cheap.
Right, right.
Well, instead of me figuring out what I want to buy, I'm going to go to the smartest person I know that sits in that situational knowledge, which is Warren Buffett. So would it be worth money, whatever time, energy, emotion, resources I need to pay to get in front of Warren Buffett?
Yeah.
So I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
I simply have to say, Warren, can you do me a favor? I've saved $30 million. What should I buy? I would love to hear that. And I think yeah. it'd be extremely valuable. And everybody like, oh my God, Dave's so lucky. He's a genius. No, I have an unconscious competency to make money. And I've distracted all the emotional aspects out of money. And I found the direct trajectory of how to make money, which is buy things low and sell things high. Reverse engineer selling. I'll yeah. tell people right now, how did I get out of bankruptcy? I went and I researched where the most rich people were that I had some sort of relationships with. And it ended up being here in Las Vegas at Larry Ruvo's big gala where the who's who of everything was here.
Mm. Yeah.
From Steve Wynn to Sheldon Adelson to all the big wigs and celebrities, Agassi. I mean, everybody was yes. there. And I literally spent my night doing one thing, walking around going, hey, man, I'm Dave Meltzer, how can I help you? Is there anything you need? I can get you anything, right?
Yeah, right.
And, like, professionally.
Right.
And how much are you willing to pay for it?
Yeah.
And I found people that wanted yacht, Rolls Royce, all types of different things that yeah. they wanted. And I wasn't going to go, say, toothpaste. Right, you know, and make a 30-cent margin right. for you. But when you're talking about yeah. big stuff, $10 million, $20 million things
right.
from really rich people, you can carve off a million or two.
Yeah,
I laugh because there's certain things I do, including speaking, right? I do a lot to empower people, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But if I do a corporate speak like anyone else, I charge.
Yeah,
right? I know that I'm bringing an ROI to that mm-hmm. company. Mm-hmm. I could change an entire sales force
right.
and create $1 billion of revenue. But, you know, I'm amazed. I think about what I charge sometimes. I'm like, wow, that was an hour.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's what you can do in 1 hour. Why won't you spend it focused in on something that's into the trajectory of what you want, your potential? And if making money is what you need, and sometimes that's where the desperation comes and becomes a success for you, is that yeah. when you have nothing to lose, you bring great clarity. Like, man, why am I wasting my time working when I could be making money? But I don't even believe in work. I believe in activity you get paid for and activity you don't get paid for. I believe that mm-hmm. we should maximize our 24 hours of man-made construct by productivity. How much value can I bring and how accessible am I? And also, how am I accessing what I want? Really clear, simple ways to get what I want in life and stay very clear. At this time in my life, I don't spend as much time just getting a direct trajectory into making money. Right? For example, a lot of businesses, you can either make money or build a business. Right now, I'm building a business. I'm building a brand. But if I wanted to get laser focused June 1st, which is tomorrow, I could change my mind and say, you know what? All my energy, directive, focus, and intent is going to be on creating margin. because I know that's the easiest way to make money.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and put myself into a more interested than interesting mode of finding out what's the best way to predetermine a sale
right.
and go buy that right. again.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. So, look, Dave, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, and I know that you got to run, and I know because a lot of other people would like to talk to you for that long, too. So
right on.
I know you got to run. I have a couple quick questions for you, and then I'll let you go. One question that I ask every guest comes to my show, I have to touch it, and I'm sure we talked about it before, but I want to go through it again. Who you know or what you know, Dave, which one is more important and why?
I believe who you know is more important.
Okay.
Because who you know includes what you know. Because if you know something, I don't have to know it, right? So why I would ask Warren Buffett what I would buy. So I know that other people think there's a combination thereof. I absolutely don't. I mean, although there probably would be a what of, I know what of who, but more importantly, who you know without a doubt, if you simply can ask for help from the who's, who already know, you don't need to know anything other than the who.
Right. Yep, I love that. Perfect answer and a great way to end this. I have one quick segment here at the end that I always walk people through. Just my random round, okay? So
all right.
Quick random questions,
I think I remember
quick
this.
Random answers. Yeah, we'll see. I'm interested to see if they're going to be the same answers as
probably
last time.
Probably not. I'm a different person.
What profession, other than your own, do you think that it would be fun to attempt?
Oh, shoot, I don't remember this. I'm going to think. What is my profession? That's the scary thing. I do everything I want to do,
that's
man.
That's fair. That's fair.
Professional athlete.
There you go. Yeah, I think that was probably the answer. Fun. Yeah,
for exactly. sure.
If you could sit on a park bench with someone, past or present, and chat with them for an hour, who would it be and why?
Einstein.
Einstein.
Yeah, because I think that combination we were talking before
yeah.
of spirituality and math, that Einstein had the greatest grasp on being able to explain how relativity and physics all mesh into one, and that he had an extraordinary awareness that he could teach me.
How do you like to consume content? Books, audiobooks, blogs, podcasts, videos?
Audio.
Okay, any sort of audio. What would be one or two either podcasts or audiobooks that you would recommend?
How You Built This, and my own, The Playbook.
The Playbook, yeah, which is a fantastic one. Yeah, great one. Moving on, give us a glimpse. Kind of already have, but give us a glimpse of your morning routine.
Wake up at 4 a.m., meditate for 20 minutes, go to the gym for 1 hour from 4:30 to 5:30, come home, focus specifically from 5:30 to 7:30 on my family. So that includes making breakfasts, lunches, paying attention to my wife, my son, my girls, leaving the house at 7:30 with 3 coaching calls on the way to work. 8 o'clock then, executing on my daily plan, reacting to where it's necessary, sticking to my 5:20 rule, which is trying to make sure that every phone call is less than 5 minutes and every meeting is less than 20. Also, my 120 rule, where my main objective with the lens of productivity and accessibility is to provide $100 worth of value and always ask for $20 worth of value back, creating a margin of 80 to give, even though I'm receiving.
Yeah. What is your go-to pump-up song?
I like the happy song.
Happy, oh yeah.
By Pharrell, okay. Yeah. I think it's the same I said before. I actually work out. That song's so motivating, and maybe I'm a little bit on the spectrum because of this, because I literally will, when I started running a lot, I'll listen to that song
just
for my entire run. Yeah.
What is something that you are just not very good at?
Singing.
Singing.
The
so,
worst.
So you don't sing
next to
along
my brother.
Happy.
Yeah no. Listen. Well, I would like to sing, but if people heard me, it would hurt them. And there's only one human being with a worse voice than me, and that's my one younger brother. And literally, people, when he sings, because he's a rabbi, will be like this, and they will not hold back. And I'm as close to him as possible with being that bad.
Love it. Dave, as we get everything wrapped up here, what is one place online where we are going to be able to find you the most?
Instagram at David Meltzer. And, you can Google David Meltzer and you'll find me.
At David Meltzer. I promise you, if you start following Dave's stuff, if you're not familiar with him, go give him a follow on Instagram. He's always, always, always adding a lot of value over there, doing a lot of Instagram lives. He engages, interacts with everybody who jumps on those and comments and asks questions. Always doing his best to, like he said, add more value to anybody that comes across his path. And then also make sure to go pick up a copy of Dave's new book when it comes out, Game Time Decision Making. If it's done by Dave Meltzer, I promise you it will be worth a read. So Dave, thank you so much for coming on the show today again.
Awesome.
And always a blast chatting.
Two-timer club, give me a robe, I'll be here.
Well, that's it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about how we've been able to get some of the guests to come on the show, have created a totally free resource called Meet Your Hero. So if you'd like to connect with people you respect and admire that are difficult to reach, you're going to want to go to travischappell.com/hero to take action and start that training today. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and remember to leave every relationship better than you found it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.